Welcome to the third episode of MBNA's Monument Matters, a new podcast produced by the Monument Builders of North America for all things monumental. I'm your host, Mike Johns, CM, AICA, from the Johns Carabelli Company, Cimarano Monuments and Flowers in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm also a past president of the Monument Builders of North America. MBNA is a 118-year-old association whose mission is to define and promote memorialization in a viable, informative, and diversified way for its members, and to enhance awareness of memorialization by the general public and the entire remembrance industry. In that spirit of promoting memorialization, the MBNA Marketing Committee is producing these podcasts as an extension of our monthly magazine, MB News. Each podcast episode features a discussion related to a magazine theme. Monument Matters podcasts invite everyone to listen and share. You'll find all of the episodes of our first season on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. Today, and in the March edition of MB News, Tooling and Carving, we are celebrating the craftspeople who are transforming raw stone into lasting tributes. Today's guests, in alphabetical order only, include A.C. Clint Button II, Steve Kaz Kazmarzik, Stan Mullins, and John Tice. A.C. Button II founded Carolina Sculpture Studio in 2003, extending his family's unbroken USA heritage in granite excellence since 1891. Congratulations. Button's work in stone sculpture began with family apprenticeship under his cousin as they worked under master sculptor Gary Sassy, that's a name we all should know, at Celestial Memorial Sculpture Studio in Barrie, Vermont. As a journeyman, he moved south and established Carolina Sculpture Studio following the retirement of in-law and master sculptor Dario Rossi in nearby Elberton, Georgia. Button's popular YouTube channel features the Virtual Stone Carving Apprenticeship Series, currently on video number 133. Wow. They can be seen on youtube.com/@Carolina Sculpture Studio. That's with the little at symbol above the number two on your keyboard. Steve Kazmarzik, shop manager at Hunt Memorials in Nashville, Tennessee, where he has worked for 11 years, but Steve has worked making monuments for over 31 years. Stan Mullins is CCO, that's Chief Creative Officer, now that's fancy, at Stan Mullins Art Studio, headquartered in Athens, Georgia. After Chief Creative Officer, I feel like we should have said Global Headquarters, Stan. But that's just me. In the last quarter century, Stan has created thousands of works of art in multiple mediums. Some of you may have visited Stan's studio back in 2020 when MBNA held its MB University in Athens, Georgia. John Tice has been a dedicated member of the Cold Spring team for an impressive 43.5 years, contributing his expertise across all areas of granite fabrication. For the past 33 years, he has specialized as a stone carver and sculptor, crafting intricate designs and sculptures on projects both large and small. With his deep knowledge and skill in working with a variety of granites, he has played an important role in creating lasting works of art and craftsmanship. Welcome, gentlemen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to have an opportunity for each of you to answer following questions. I'll give them to you. Well, you already have them, so we'll just take them one at a time. First, please share with us what led each of you to become a dust eater. Stan, you want to kick off?
I guess I'll take the first bite. Art, creating art is a kind of a dirty field in the sense of dust eater. I've really been an artist all my life. I didn't know that there was such a term. You know, as a little kid, I'm sure we all of us here assembled, just loved making things, making dirt, making dirt into things. So it's really been a lifelong endeavor. Excuse me. And stone is relatively new to me. As I was thinking growing up, I was more of a painter, but I was always making things as well as two-dimensional, three-dimensional things. so it really came to be more of a focus around 2005 when I was working on a monument of Coach Dooley here in University of Georgia, Ville, Athens. And that's where I met Tom Oglesby. And I don't know if many of y'all remember Tom, great guy, but he just kind of said upon his first visit to my studio, I had a bunch of marble, Carrara marble. I was over in Italy for a long time. And he just kind of stepped up and said, "Why aren't you carving my granite?" And for whatever reason, I stood toe to toe with him. I said, "Why aren't you paying me to carve your granite?" And that was the beginning of a lasting friendship. He's passed away, but working with Keystone has been really inspirational and continues to be. They're great guys, and that's where I've met most of you all, either in Elberton or through some aspect of that.
Thanks, Stan. John, what about you?
I worked with my father for years in the sandblast, and then he would do sculpting and tool work and lettering and stuff. And that just kind of got my head around it. That's like, I want to do that type of stuff to create from raw stone. And that's what I did. And then I kept going.
Clint?
Some people are known, you know somebody in there, an athlete, or they play music or they whatever. I've carved my whole life. I bought my first knife on my sixth birthday, and laid my finger open that day probably, and have always carved. And we grew up just by the Barry, and my grandfather, you know, we were supposed to have a better life. We weren't supposed to go in the shed. We're supposed to get an education, you know, have a real career and not struggle with stone, with all the detriment that it brings to your body and, you know, the dust and the injuries and everything. And I carved for years and years, everything, you know, a lot of ice as a chef, which is a tremendous platform to prep somebody to go into a commercial stone carving capacity where time is of the essence. And the media is very comparable and very economical. I was at a point in my life, I'd finished a culinary apprenticeship and was back visiting in Chelsea and just, you know, over the hill from Barry, and wasn't sure whether I was going to stay in the culinary field or not. And a couple of friends said, "Clint, why don't you go to Barry and carve? You always carve. That's what you do. Just go up Barry and carve." And I went up and checked in. I ended up, you know, Fantoni kicked me out, and a couple other people are like, "You're too old. You never learned to do this. You know, you don't just do this." And I showed Gary a few pieces. You saw an article about him in Barry Life. And he says, I showed him what I could do. And he says, "Oh yeah, if you can do that in stone, I got work for you. Come on back." And several years later, I finally rearranged my life enough and just went back to Barry and walked in and was summarily told by one of the other top sculptors in town that you don't just do this. You need to, you know, this is a lot harder than you think. And, you know, but Gary came in after lunch and says, "Yeah, see you in the morning." And a few months later, that same sculptor pulled me aside, seeing some of my work at Sandblast, when it was being lettered after I carved. He said, "Where'd you learn to do this?" He says, "People don't just carve. Where'd you learn this?" And so that's pretty much it. And a few days after I started at Gary's, because my family's been in Vermont for about 1,000 years, I think officially, mom visited and recognized Andy beside me as my cousin, her cousin. And he just opened the floodgates in terms of teaching me and made me his legacy and taught me everything. And that really made it possible for me to transition from being a journeyman and working under Gary to opening my own studio, shortly after I left Barry. And I wasn't expecting that. I mean, we opened a studio. There was a need down here near Elberton, and it's a much different market than Barrie. But I don't know. I've always carved. That's just what I do. And the friends I have that know me for a long time, they aren't impressed. This is just what Clint does. So, nothing like cutting stone, man. Just love it. So,
right.
So that's about it.
Thanks, Clint. Kaz, what's your deal?
Well, my story's kind of similar to John's. I really accidentally fell into the monument business. But once I started learning, my mentor, when he was teaching me, it just very much came very easy. Everything came very natural, and I kind of worked my way through the shop from being, the grunt, the guy that just washes stones, loads the truck, goes out and installs in the cemetery, to, stencil application, shape carving, and eventually worked my way into hand tooling and all that. And like I said, it all just came very easy and natural. So I just kept trying to just challenge myself, wanting to do more, learn more. Here I am. I mean, if you'd have told me, all those years ago that I'd still be doing it today, I probably would have laughed in your face. But, here I am. And that granite, you said dust eater, and it gets inside of you, and it makes you fall in love with it somehow. And, I absolutely have.
I think that's a good way to put it, Kaz. Absolutely. Some people don't really understand the degree of difficulty involved in creating those projects, right? And all of you sitting here say just how easy it was for you once you started, once you picked up that tool and started at it. So what do you suggest to that person who has it in their head that maybe they want to give it a whirl, but are just intimidated?
If you're intimidated by the stone, this isn't the work for you to be doing. I mean, I don't want to come off.
That's where I thought you were going, exactly there.
Way, but you have to decide what you're going to do, and then you have to do it. We had a big guy that came in, and he was big enough to stomp me into the ground. He came into Gary's, and he carved, 10-foot tall bears out of logs with chainsaws that looked really great. He knew how to develop the form, reveal what was inside and everything. We gave him a piece of stone and he played with it for 2 or 3 days and he didn't do anything to it. And my cousin Andy said something to him. And he says, "Well, I'm just trying to see what the tools will do." And I said, "Well, they won't do anything if you don't pick them up and use them. You got to make it happen." So much. Everybody wants to know where the machine is.
That's funny.
It's like, nah, there isn't any machine, man. I'm the machine. And then they think you're being fat. People just got to, start. You got to spend the money, buy the tools. You got to make your hands hurt, your lungs, everything. You got to pay the price, down to flesh or whatever.
Yes.
Maybe somebody else has got an easier way to do it, but I.
Wow. No, Clint, you really summed it up nicely that it is a fearless endeavor. I mean, the painter on a canvas has to have a fearlessness about him to make that first mark. Mm-hmm. That's a certain fear. Certain fearlessness, power to overcome it, to make that mark. There's a lot of difference between a painter and a sculptor, period, and then a sculptor in granite. That is ultimate fearlessness. You have to make that mark, and you have to, like Clint was saying, you have to get physically behind it. And I'm smaller than most of you guys. I'm not small, but it is just, it's inner strength. You have to have the courage to stand in front of that stone and take what it's dishing out. And it can be fun. I liken it to a lot of jujitsu, because you have to take the inner energy of that thing that you're facing, channel it back into itself. And that puts a toll on your body for sure. But that was really well put, Clint. That was great.
Yeah. And even the comparison of, you know, you said that, you know, the guy, he was a chainsaw artist, you know, he does, you know, wood. And that's great. And a lot of those things can cross over into granite, with the exception of the removal speed. You know, when you're using a chainsaw, you're making fast cuts, you're removing a lot of material, and that just doesn't happen with stone. You got to sit there and watch that stone
that's
move.
That's a great point. Yeah,
minuscule inches at a time. I mean, fractions.
Yeah,
of
time goes out the window. You're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It doesn't move like that. And even with paint, you know, painters, you know, if there's a little mistake, you know, you can go back over and touch it up. And, you know, it, you know, sometimes granite doesn't let you do that.
Unforgiving. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like you said, you have to be very confident in what you're doing, and knowing that, you know, whether you're using a hand tool or hammer and chisel or burr bits, once you go over it, you know, you went over it, you know, where you hit that stone, and whatever came off, and you have to work with what is there. So there's a lot of stuff that is out of, you know, out of your hands, you know.
Truly.
You got to trust that stone as much as it's trusting you. So.
and the tools too. Because
correct.
Correct. There's so much to up laughing with you, because you're sitting there watching it and nothing's happening.
Right.
A chainsaw root or a paint on, you know, watercolor, you know.
Instant gratification. It does not happen with stone.
You don't get much of that with stone. That's right.
Yeah, but the thing about stone, about granite, and I realize you can get marble, you know, dimensional really big as well. But all the other carving, and I've carved a lot of different material, the depth, being able to dive into a block that, you know, weighs 10 or 15 tons, it's a carving experience that you're only going to get by doing it. Because I tell people, it's like going out in the big water, out in the ocean, you know, 5 miles away from shore, jumping in the ocean. And if not, it's like versus jumping in a pool with a regular small, like wood is always limited. And, you know, if it's going to be monolithic, and having a big piece of stone is just such a rush to do. I mean, and the fearlessness, I want to throw this in. There's got to be a fearlessness on the capacity on people that do this. You have to be able to say, oh yeah, I can cut that, and then do it. Because you're not just doing this for fun and you give it to your neighbor if it doesn't work out. You know, you're on the hook. You know, the stuff I cut, I don't own the stones. Somebody else's art, they do every bit of manufacturing that they can possibly do, so that if it gets buggered up, I'm on the hook. And you get a die that's already got $10,000 or $15,000 worth of work in it. And that's part of the fearlessness that a lot of people, I think that probably intimidates people more than actually doing it, because there isn't, you know, I don't get a free piece of stone if this doesn't go right. You know, we're starting all over again, and that may be, you know, legal issues. There's all kinds of stuff that goes along with that. And that's one of the things that, and this may be jumping ahead, but I think a lot of the younger people that look at it now, they're used to having a reset button. You know, they're going to start that video game over again.
Yeah.
They get started over for free, and there, that ain't going to happen with stone. You better be able to do it. You better shut up.
There's no safety net.
Yeah.
John, do we miss anything?
No reset button.
Right.
Well, I agree with all of the things that they just said. And you know, when you're working with granite, you can't put it back once it's gone. And when they talked about learning the tools, that's what I teach my mentees or whatever, that you got to build your mental and muscle memory when you're working with granite. That's what I try to emphasize that.
Yes.
Muscle memory. Once you have that, then that fear is lessened, because you already know what that saw blade or that grinding wheel is going to do before you touch the stone. If you have it in your head that okay, I can do this. These are the first cuts I have to make. That's what I'm going to do. And you have to visually, mentally, and see it before it's there. And that's how I go about it. So,
yeah. Thanks, guys. So do you think tooling and carving is at risk of becoming a lost art? Steve?
I kind of do. I feel like with high turnover in shops nowadays, some workers just aren't staying around long enough to learn those advanced jobs that we're doing or advanced skills that are needed. And also with technology, even though technology sometimes is great, the access saws and CNC machines doing a lot of the work, it's making less of a demand for that skill set. And then also, even on our end, the only time we do raised letters anymore or stuff, kind of that part of it, is when we're, doing duplicates, matching estate, lots, stuff like that. And that's kind of becoming a little less every year as we go on. And when we do new estate lots, unfortunately we're even kind of getting away from raised letters, and if we are doing raised letters, it might only be the family name, not necessarily, the individual footstones and stuff like that. So I think just as a, as a whole, we're all transitioning away from, whether it's a V cut letter with chisel or a round raised or a square raised. I think we're all just kind of, getting a little bit away from it, just because there's easier, faster ways to do it, with just sandblast V cut letters. I kind of feel like we are, it is getting a little bit lost, but then I'm kind of renewed when I, when we go to Hard Rocks and we do the raised letter demo and everyone is standing around wanting to learn it. There's times where I feel like it is losing, but there's times where I'm revamped and re-energized, when I watch a lot of the younger guys that want to learn that, and that's one of the most highly demanded things to that we do there. They want to learn that is raised letters and chisels.
Anybody else want to comment?
Well, I'll jump in with the sculptural aspect. That the CNC machines are a boon and a curse, of course. I didn't know Dario Rossi well, but I knew where he came from, Carrara, better. I got to see over there, I was working over there, primarily as a painter transitioning to become a sculptor in Carrara. And I got to see, just generationally, time-wise, I got to see the transition of the guard from the old guys that were drinking a shitload of wine and making fun of me because I was trying to put water in my wine because we got to go back to work. There was no OSHA, MSHA. They were doing it all. And by hand, craftsmen to the extreme, but it was their way of life. Really beautiful. And even over there, they're using CNC machines all the time. They're hand finishing, which is also, exceptional. Everything talent. But they're creating more and more of the classics. So they've got a 3D scan, and the robot is... So that, in a sense, might be a boon for us because people are buying sculpture. They're not necessarily buying original sculpture, but that is creating a new and continued market. And so also, like with what you were saying, Kev, with the Hard Rock, and I know you'll allude to this too, Clint, but literally when someone wants a monument for their family, that kind of legacy, they are going to come to us. They won't want to pay us what it really costs, but because we love the craft so much, we're willing to take that risk and keep that going. I know it never really pays out, but we do it, I do it because I love to do it. That 15 ton block that was the Hungarian, became the Hungarian freedom fighter. I started her and I thought of it. I mean, she was 10 feet tall. I built a scaffolding around her. I thought of her as my Atlantic voyage in a big ship. And I was the captain, I was the crew, she was the rusted pearl, the granite pearl, you know, a giant pirate ship that every day I had something to do on that thing. And it became a journey. And that's our lives. We make these things that become the monuments of people and families and wonderful lives well lived that other people hire us to honor. It's incredible. And that kind of thing won't go away. Technology can enhance it, but it's really, at the end of the day, it's just another tool for us to use.
John, Clint, what do you think?
I think he's right. I think I use a lot of it at this company. We use CNC machines, and that's the way I can get a lot of stuff done. They do the bulwark for me. I do the finishing work and the fun part. but I also know how to take it from block form to the end product. That's what I learned from my dad and stuff. So, if I wouldn't have these newer technologies, I probably would have been done 10 years ago just because of the bulwark and the physical demand, like you guys were talking about, on your body, that to sit there for 4 weeks or 5 weeks in front of a stone to finish it, whereas if they help me, it only takes me 2 or 3 weeks. So, and I could be working on multiple pieces at the same time, multiple jobs. So yeah, I don't think it's going to get lost. I think it's just, it's getting sidetracked. But then, like he said, Stan did, people are still going to want monuments and sculptures. So we're going to keep giving them to them.
Wow. I'm gonna be the one that says I'm not a big fan of the technology. I talk about it. This is one of the reasons I have been working on this apprenticeship series so much, is that the foundational work that you do, learning how to cut and pitch and do molding work and cut panels and square up a block and all these things, everybody that calls me that wants to do something, they want to carve something, they want to carve the very elaborate fun stuff. And we talked about this earlier, how it takes a long time to get to that point. And the learning curve of how to tool it, how to do all the basic, boring, mundane, just, I'm sick of it. That's what prepares you to be ready to do the good work. And the CNC stuff and everything, it's inevitable. I know it's coming. And as, we had talked about it in recent years with some of the different manufacturers and, saying, oh, we're far, far out because, the problems with, some of the early CNC guys had these distortions in what it would produce because they didn't calculate all of the angles and everything. And the work was cool because it looked like Christ had melted or something, or he was smeared across the page, and it was really cool, but you can't sell that stuff. It's going to take all these years until it builds enough memory in there and to be able to have enough files to address these projects. But I don't think anybody really in our business really was thinking about what AI might do to that. And how AI is coming in and it could advance this tremendously. And, I have I have no interest in the CNC stuff, and I've had stuff scanned and enlarged for bronze work. You know, we did one and it was easier to just scan it and mill it. And I work with people that regularly do that to enlarge projects. But they've also asked me to enlarge stuff for them because I can do that. Part of having this apprenticeship series and putting this information down before it's lost, and learning how to do all the basic work. One of the reasons I could succeed with my independent studio, and I built my studio outside of Elberton on purpose, You know, I'm not where everybody's going to stop and chit chat and visit. And, oh, it's so great. We got Todd Dario says he got named Artist of the Year in 96. Worst thing that ever happened to him. He says everybody hangs around. They want to know the great Dario, the great sculptor, the great artist of Georgia. And he says, I kick him out. I lock the door. I say, get out of my studio. And he says, I lock the door. They come and they bang on the windows and I pretend to hear them. I ignore them. And, you know, in Barrie, we had all these people that would come in, you know, different manufacturers and retailers would come to town and they'd come over to Celestial to see their stones or to meet us, to basically market us as an asset to their company. And, you know, I was on the clock with the union. And I'll stand around and talk all day long, boss, no problem. Because Gary was having us do that. If I do that here, I've got to find another several hours of the day to work because there's nobody else doing the work and nobody else making the money. And so part of doing the, you know, I'm just transitioning. I'm doing a life-size angel right now. I've been swinging compasses, enlarging on the triangle, you know, lost art. Nobody in America can do it, you know, is what some of the people teaching it says. If you buy our $800 workshop, we'll show you how to do it because nobody knows how to do it. You know, they're not even, they're an hour from Barrie and they're bragging that nobody can do it when they've been to the studios and seen us do it. And so there's a real money incentive on a lot of this to control the knowledge. And that's just like it used to be. Andy wouldn't talk to me when he showed up. He had nothing to say to me. I was a new guy. He didn't know me. The less I know, the less money I can make, the less threat I am to him. The craft, the art, whatever, you know, there'll be hobby people that'll play with it. There'll be fine art people that will come and do a little bit in it, but it'll be a side deal or once in a while. And then there's going to be people that are really deep in the industry that are trained. And those people are at risk of being lost. What they know, you know, I do shell rock pitch. Me and Andy do it. That's it. I came to Alberton. Nobody can do it. It's a lost art. Nobody can do it. So I did something. They go, my God, where'd you learn to do that? And I said, my cousin taught me. And he had to sneak it out of three or four different people and put it together to make it work. And you know, these things are being lost. You know, we had a few other, I don't know what you call them, specialty things we were reproducing work up in Barrie that we were trying to figure out and reverse engineer how they actually cut and got these patterns. And some of it, we couldn't do it. And this is with three or four masters working on it. Guys that have been in the business for 40, 50 years, and they couldn't figure out how they tooled something like that. And that's a wake up call. And, but I built my studio isolated so that, you know, I get run over by a truck, lock the doors, come in, and 20, 30 years later, it's still a real granite studio. It hasn't been amended by the creep of technology where this, oh, it's a little easier. We'll get some die grinders. Oh, we'll scan this up and then we'll get it enlarged. I understand people do that. We'll be here doing this as long as people hire us to do it. And whatever reasons you've got for using different resources, technology, product, great, whatever. But if you don't use us, we won't preserve us. And I don't know how else to, you know, you can only sugarcoat it so much. I'm hoping that these videos will enlighten people to an extent. That this is hard work and takes a long time. You're not going to just do this and watch a few videos. That's the part of the problem with modern technology, people, whatever, is, and look it up on my phone. I'll just check it out. I'll watch a video for 30 minutes. Now I know how to do everything. Yeah. You know, and you don't internalize it. If you pound on that stone for a month or 6 weeks before you get to go to the good part, you're going to internalize a whole lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there are no shortcuts. I mean, you can't skip it. And so, you know, the point of my videos, especially this apprenticeship stuff, you know, my mother wanted me to do it. My uncle was really big on me not letting this disappear and die because they watched their father do this work his whole life. And his father and other relatives. These videos aren't about the contemporary environment. In 150 years, they're going to be a whole different, there's going to be a whole different impact from them because this isn't being recalled as a hobby. I do metal shaping as a hobby. I really enjoy it. I know some coach builders that build million-dollar, multi-million-dollar cars that have been a big influence on me. I love what they do. And they've watched the hobby aspect of it diminish what they do, because everybody thinks they can get an English wheel at Harbor Freight and they're going to just build a Cobra and they're going to be great. And they want to argue with these masters about what actually works. And so these masters, they're not on a lot of these groups and forums anymore. They're tired of all the knuckleheads. So I worry that this craft will be diminished and just sidelined. I mean, and then it'll just disappear because there won't be anybody to teach you how to do it. There won't be people that commit to it for many, many years and then find out, hey, this is really hard. And then say, well, I got dust. I need compensation, you know, because that's real. So I'll shut up.
That's all right.
Great stuff. Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, for me, I remember my dad telling me when he started carving, cutting raised letters and so on, the guy in the shop was very reluctant to show him how to do it. Job security, right?
Knowledge is money. Yeah.
Knowledge is power. It's knowing what you need to know and what you don't know to get you to where you're going. So I like that we do need to have a shift from holding that information close to sharing it with those that want to take that legacy into the next generation. Because if we don't, it doesn't. And so, you know, he struggled. And he learned, he saw some things. He didn't learn the tips and tricks. He developed the tips and tricks on his own. And he was, you know, he was my dad. So he taught them to me. And now I'm starting to teach them to my son. But, you know, historically, that really wasn't done. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we're here where we are today with a limited number of people that have the skill set. But hopefully we're developing enough interest to move that forward. So to that, my next question to the group would be, what encouragement would you give someone wanting to enter the profession, and how can someone learn and improve their skills? John, you want to start with that one?
I would say you have to get out and find a place, if you can find one, to watch someone do it and see if you might like it and try it a little bit. And if you think that you like that process of taking something from nothing into the form you want it to become, then that'd be one way to get into it. But then, like, to improve your skills, like I tell my guys, practice, practice, practice. And then learn your tools, whether they be the pneumatic hammers, a hammer and a chisel, your angle saws, any of that. You have to learn your tools so you build the memory in your arms, in your hands, in your eye-to-hand control, all that stuff, and practice always till you get tired of it. And then when you're tired of it, you got to go do some more. Mm-hmm. And when you're tired of that, you got, guess what? The next day, you got to do the same thing again. Because we do letters here, round raised, square raised. We do V tools, and I tell them when they're learning, it's like, now tomorrow you get to do two more of these. And then the next day, you get to do two more. And then when you get sick of it, guess what you get to do next week? But 6 months down the road, or a year down the road, they're going to look at that and say, well, we need these two round raised letters done. Yeah, no problem. No problem, because they've got it already built into their system that I know how long it's going to take me to do that. Not a problem. I'll have that done before lunch or whatever. So that's, you got to want it. You got to want to do it. And luckily, I got a couple of people here that want to learn. And so I'm teaching them stuff. But I tell them it's going to take, I tell them it's like 3 to 5 years, but I know that, Button there, he's got a longer time period, which is probably true if you want to learn the old, all the old ways of doing it. And I probably only learned some of them over my course of working with my dad and stuff, but it's about all I got on that. It's just practice, practice, practice.
Thanks, John. Stan?
Yeah, I mean, we're all going to say essentially that. You have to want it, but encouragement from folks like us is helpful. And I think it's being yearned for. I live in a university town. Right now, I haven't been going out much because I've got a ton of work to do. So thankfully, I'm isolated because of the work and the work ethos that I've developed over a lifelong. It's very much like the athlete or the singer. Arts and athletics go together. And I would link sculpture, specifically granite sculpture. It's in the athletic heavy of the arts. You have to be physically strong enough to do it. It takes a toll on your body. And that person, that the young person that is inspired, or the new person, let's say, take age out of it, the new person to the endeavor is attracted to the stone because of the challenge. So if we, as a good coach, and that's kind of where we would be in this aspect of encouragement, as a good coach, you find their niche and you help them excel in their niche. 10,000 hours is never going to be enough, but that 10,000 hours evaporates because they're enjoying. Enjoy is a relative word, okay? I'm not saying it's pleasurable, but the satisfaction of achievement. And that, I think, is something that once they're engaged being a new person to the stone, and we'll talk specifically about granite, because it's a higher commitment than alabaster, marble, you know, any of the things that we could say, wow, this is like butter. It's beautiful stone in itself, but we're kind of focusing on granite for now because it's tough, but it is a pinnacle. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Clint?
Well, I want to touch on what Stan just said about comparing granite to the softer stone. Simply because one of the, I'm trying to encourage people with videos because I understand the mileage. You know, I say, yeah, well, sell your house and move 1,000 miles and learn how to do it. Go to Barry, you know, and people are like, well, I don't know if I can do that. I got a wife and, you know, well, okay. Well, it's going to have obstacles to try to learn. But because I had a background in carving a lot of other media, both personally and professionally, I've done a lot of soft stone through the studio over the years. And it's amazing to not just go into the, oh, it's so soft and it's whatever. See, I was warned up in Barry because everything was focused. You're like, oh, says, no, you can't do marble. You'll push right through it. If you used to cut in stone, you'll get into marble and you put the same energy into it and you'll just blow it apart. But because I'd carved, I mean, ice is a fantastic medium to train in. It's crystal and it breaks just like stone, and you've got an hour to work it. You can do it with really cheap tools by carving blocks, or if you're up north, you can freeze them, you put them in a freezer, and people can carve for almost nothing to learn about producing the form. But when you move from a piece of granite where you're sharpening tools every 5 to 10 minutes into a piece of marble, and you carve until your legs go numb because you're sitting there, and your tools stay sharp for weeks. It's such a revelation, and you're like, oh my God, this, it isn't the punishment. It's the, wow, I get to just keep carving, and I don't have to stop and go away. You know, go away, carve a Christ in the Garden or a Pietà or something like that with all the drapery going on everywhere. And if you're like me, just kind of ADD all over the place, and you go to the grinder and you come back and you were carving in one spot, you go, oh my God, it's wrong over here. And you go there and you see something else. And then you forget where you're actually working because you're traveling all over the stone because you don't have any continuity on it. And it's sort of a global process to finish it, but it's hard to stay focused. I'd encourage people, you got to start, period. You know, and I'm, a big advocate of apprenticeship because I think it's the right way for the money to flow. You know, you can, if you can find an apprenticeship, if you're fortunate enough to develop one, and you know, if you screw up, you're out the door, you're going to put a different effort into it than if you're just trying it on your own. Well, yeah, I'm going to go, it's time to go kick off and we're going to go downtown for now. I'm over it now. No, you got to work, you got to produce, you got to do it right. And you also have to, as part of that, you know, in this business, you have to say, yeah, I'll suck it up and take it, because I'm sure I've got dust I could claim I got from Gary. I'm sure I claim that some of my aches and pains go back to Celestial. And, you know, people have to take responsibility for themselves and realize that there's a price to pay. We only talked about a pound of flesh, that you can't just come in and do this and then find out in 5 years, wow, this is really hard. I still can't make a pretty face. She's pickle-headed monkey ugly, man. She's just weird. And
say that again. Pickle-headed monkey.
Yeah, or she goes out, you know, you get down to, you know, at the end of the day, and oh, she's so gorgeous and whatever. You come back in the morning, she's been out drinking all night. She's all cockeyed, had a stroke. And that's reality. And you have to keep pushing through it and not say, well, this is really tough. Now I'm going to go get an easy job. You know, I know in Elberton, there was a, you know, during COVID and everything, there was a bleed of a certain amount of talent because of the way supplies changed and, you know, people went from the plants to the quarries, and then the quarries, they said, this isn't any fun. And they went to a normal world job, and there's been challenges. And, you know, every time we're at such a point in this industry that every time we lose one or two people, that's a significant amount of people to lose out of the industry. Someone that could become, you know, the next good person in whatever specialty, or maybe they're going to have a very global perspective and they do a lot of different tasks. It's difficult to encourage people. You know, I've got a guy that called, he's in New York. He wants to come down and see the studio, and he's been watching videos, and he wants to hang out, he wants to learn, he wants to develop the instinct, whatever that means. You know, like the osmosis that Dario talked about, people hang around the studio and think it's going to make them a sculptor just because they hang around with him. No, I won't. It's not. But you never know, this guy may be great, he may not, I don't know. But yeah, the least I can do is say, sure, come on down. And if I don't like him, I'll kick him out. And, you know, but hopefully he'll fit in and he'll get better. You know, it's hard to encourage people if you don't include them. And include them in this business usually means there's got to be some money involved. And so having an apprenticeship, paying somebody to actually do it, or allowing somebody this, the reason I did the virtual apprenticeship stuff is because we've got companies that have asked me about training employees, but the logistics of having somebody travel, me or them, and paying for that on top of paying for the training doesn't always fit. So, you know, one guy I know that's studying these videos really hard and training works in Marvel, and he's being allowed to watch these videos in some capacity with his work. And that's the whole point, is that this knowledge is there for you to review and look over and learn about it to try to, you know, if that's what I can do to encourage somebody, you know, great, you know, I'm glad to do it. And that's the goal, is to try to make one or two people actually get good at this over the next, you know, however many years. But it's expensive and it's difficult, and it's hard to find people that are patient and competent. So I don't know, but you never know who that person might be. You just don't.
Any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, kind of piggyback on what Clint just said, because that was going to be my, you know, my top thing to say, like, sorry, coming in, is patience. Because I'm not sure what the apprenticeship program and journeyman program for sculpture is, but I know there is not an apprenticeship program for the monument industry, like just, you know, making, you know, memorials, headstones, markers and stuff like that, which it would be great if there was. But I mean, I know, you know, if you become an electrician and you train under a master electrician, you're an apprentice for 5 years, and then you become a journeyman, and and then you step up to, a master electrician. And we really don't have that. And frankly, I think I feel like I'd still be an apprentice, even though I've been doing this for over 30 years, because I'm still learning every single day. So this isn't a trade where you're going to come in and just, like Clint said, boom, one day you're going to go from not knowing how to sculpt or not knowing how to make a monument to knowing how to do that. It's not just going to happen in 1, 2, 3, 4 years. It's really a lifetime. And to even, further that, Clint, you're going to have another new viewer on your videos. I watched your intro yesterday.
Two.
So, I mean, I'm going to be diving into your, your YouTube channel, because I, myself, I want to continue learning. I know I don't know enough yet.
Yeah, but none of, and that's part of why there isn't a master, an apprenticeship. I apprenticed because my cousin took me in and really apprenticed me. Gary's chisel, here's a hand machine. This is how you hold it, cut that stone. He walked away. That was it. He didn't teach me. My cousin taught
me. Yeah, it's more throw into the deep end of the pool and see if you can swim.
And fired. And the thing about the apprenticeship stuff is it's really geared, these videos are geared towards us.
Yeah.
Because I'm still learning. The stone's down there laughing at me, saying, oh yeah, go ahead. I'll tell you what's gonna happen. And the videos are, there's people like you, that have got decades in the industry. You know what a banker, you know what stands are, you know how to pitch, you know how to do a lot of this stuff, and it's gonna make sense to you. But there's a lot of people that don't, whether they work at a monument shop and they install stuff. And maybe they've seen a hand machine, but they've never run one, or they've got one that's so burned up, wore out that it won't push the chisel for nothing. It's we're all learning. I tell in my videos, Julian, I used to call them masters, and they say, "Oh, you stupid! Shut up!" You know what I'm talking about? Because the more you do, the more you understand how little you really know. And so we can't call ourselves a master sculptor like a master electrician that can test through, because they got so many hours and they can figure out all these diagrams and actually have a quantitative evaluation of what they can do, because we don't do the same. There's what, like 12 or 15 circuit figurations for most 90% of, wire and whatever. And that's it, and it's not, okay, well, we're going to do limbwood letters on this project that's pitched and that's, with portraits, carvings. You gotta be, where do you draw the line so you're a master? You're not. When you dead, if I want to call you a master, that's cool. But I just keep learning,
Learning and patience are by far the two things that I would absolutely preach to anybody wanting to do it or anybody that's been doing it for a little while. Patience will go a long, long way. You're not going to jump into the deep end of the pool. You got to take all those steps to get to that point. Yeah.
That's why the technology stuff worries me, is because people are able to circumvent that basic boring stuff where they've got to do it right before they have the foundation to make everything else work. And they want to just go and do the fun part at the end. I'll do that fun part too, buddy. Down the road here. So, but yeah,
I just keep thinking about the comment, the stone laughing at you.
Yes,
it's true, right? And I think
do you guys remember Larry Jones? Is it Keystone? Anyway, another long time, just great older guy in my circle. He would say that. And I tried to counter him. It's like, it's not necessarily laughing at you. Maybe he's laughing with you. Oh, no, he's laughing at me. Thing with stone and with the material that we, any one of us, we're talking stone specifically, that we use, we have to be humble with it.
Yes.
And it humbles us for sure. But also one of the things that I like to encourage for myself is, it is a team joint spiritual effort. Once we do get in tune, we can joke aside. I love the aspects of every one of you guys and everybody in the field. But I can sense from you guys too the love of the stone. And that's something that will attract a certain amount of people because we're a little bit crazy. But when you begin to put that love of, and it's almost verging on a passion to do it. We have to have a certain craziness and a passion to be standing in front of a rock for hours on end.
Oh, no, I do it all for money. Yeah, it's all money. Yeah.
Well, I know you say that, and it's a joke.
It was. You have
I love you for saying it, and I get the spirit. I call it stationary nomad. And the beautiful oxymoronic sense of those two words together. But it's it. Our minds go other places when you're standing in front of that rock and you're carving, like Clint said, till your feet go numb because you're so entranced. And like you were saying, guys, like literally, you're literally watching the stone evaporate, but it doesn't happen like a chainsaw on wood.
Right.
You know, but and so the love of the stone, the love of the material, I would add in there is something I just wanted to add. Everything you guys have said is so inspirational too. But remember that stone speaks to and through us, and that's eternity. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I always say it tells the truth. You know, and we're the idea that the stone is it simply reveals what you can do. And what you didn't do, because there'll be pieces you cut and you stand back and you're like, my God, where did that come from? That is so mind blowing, fantastic that I didn't screw it up, because
that's right. Yeah.
All the good and bad are in there. And, and it's easy to go a little bit too far. And, you know, there's still a few stones, a lot of stones that look, I go, oh yeah, I cut that. I can tell, you know, I can see where this is off and this is right and this is wrong. And then there's others that I look at now, you know, years or decades later, and I'm like, wow, man, that was cool. I know I was there, but I wasn't
that's neat.
I wasn't really there because the stone came out so well. I think a lot of people, I think that's part of the encouragement, is that nobody does this because they want to make some crappy stone. They want to go out there and make something gorgeous and beautiful, and they try it, and they find out, wow, that ain't going to just happen. And they do a bunch of ugly stuff before they ever do anything nice. Yeah. And I think that's part of, I think that can go towards the basics, because when you can cut a really nice panel or a really nice check and cove or pitch a stone with no point marks on it, and you get that initial gratification of doing good work after some struggle, then you realize that moving forward, you're going to have the same pluses and minuses as you're learning, and hopefully keep them invested in the craft in the industry and learning about this.
I kind of have a little rule of thumb that you can never be satisfied, no matter how good, you know, that particular piece comes out. Over the years, I've become my own worst critic out in the shop. You know, if I'm working on a piece and it gets all the way through to the end, and the guys will come up, man, that looks really great. And I'm the first one to go, yeah, but this spot right here, didn't turn out, you know, and they just look at me like, you know, a cross-eyed cat, and they're like, man, it's beautiful. And I'm, you know, so, you know, you're only as good as your last work. So, you know, I always try and better myself with every project, whether it's a little pet marker or, you know, an estate marker. You know, I put the same amount of care and attention into each one.
Wow. You know, there's no question. There's a lot of passion in this panel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, I think, our takeaway from today, is that anyone that wants to get into this aspect of the business, you've got to have some kind of internal spark that's pushing you from the inside out to do it. It can't be an external pressure. Very rarely will that work? Those of you that are here hearing the podcast, maybe this has helped spark or fuel that spark that's inside of you. We had a couple more questions that, what tools do you have on the bench, and what projects have been the most challenging to you guys? This podcast could go the rest of the afternoon, but I think I think the folks that have come and joined us today really got the gist that if you want to do it, the way to do it is to start doing it.
Yes.
You have to start. There are people in our industry that are willing to share their talents and tips. I give kudos to Clint for the series. I've just seen a couple of glimpses of it. I have dabbled and tried to do some videos on my own, cut and lettering, and I just, it always falls by the wayside. So kudos for that.
Thank you. It's, if you keep trying, because I did a lot of videos for a long time before I found something that was simple enough that I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's got to be pretty simple, because I'm not tech. I just
right. Don't. So at this point, I'd like to thank Clint, Kaz, Stan, John, and all of you, our out-of-studio audience, for joining us today. The key points, I think, that the takeaways are, if you want to do it, do it. Talk mm-hmm. to us. There isn't any, I don't think, today's atmosphere, I think, is a lot different. The folks that are here today carving and tooling recognize how difficult it was for them to get someone to teach them. Because there's so few people doing it today, they recognize if they don't start teaching someone else, it ends. And none of us here want it to end. So I know you'll also enjoy reading more about these talented people working day in and day out to create the outstanding and memorable memorials in the March issue of MB News. Boy, say that three times fast. The next episode in the spring episode podcast series will be recorded on the floor directly from the 2025 Monument Industry Show in Cleveland. So watch our channel for that special conversation. But more importantly, join us in Cleveland March 13th to 16th, and maybe you'll have an opportunity to be part of our studio audience. So I want to thank you for listening to Monument Matters. MBNA invites you to stay connected for the 2025 Monument Industry Show in Cleveland, or join as a member. Visiting www.monumentbuilders.org is a great place to start. For MBNA, I'm Michael Johns. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen. For comments and feedback, please drop a note to info@monumentbuilders.org. Thank you.